Okay, now can you hear me? So I am an unlikely filmmaker. I'm a woman. I'm 53, and I have no formal filmmaking training. So I'd like to go through what got me to this point so you have a little context, and then I'll show the trailer, and then I'll take your questions. So three threads. Thread number one. I was raised in the Oakland First Ward in the San Francisco Bay Area. And my brother's here. He just shouted a yay for the Oakland First Ward. And the adults at the time that I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, many of them had attended UC Berkeley during the 1960s or had been in the area in the 60s. So they may have come from Idaho or Utah, but then ended up there and were changed by that climate, one of which was my father. And the way that was manifested, that the way their thoughtfulness was manifested in the ward was, one way was that they had an alternative Sunday school class. And in that alternative Sunday school class, in my view, you could talk about anything. And I started attending that Sunday school class, I'm not sure why, but from the time I was about 15. And my memory of it is that they talked about the validity of Joseph Smith, the legitimacy of the Book of Mormon. I remember women in the context of the lesson talking about their sex lives. I look back on that class and think I really could have said, maybe it was almost like Sunstone, that I really could have said anything and it would have been okay. It would have been talked about and discussed. And so that gives you a sense of it. And the group from that ward that has primarily stayed with me in my life and been on my mind as I have made important decisions are the women of the Oakland First Ward. They were thoughtful, educated, interesting. Many of them had gone to UC Berkeley. They had what I felt was an equal voice in the ward, an equal voice, it seemed to me, in their relationships, and they had a book club. And in that book club, they would sometimes let men join by invitation, but it was for the women. And they would read anything except church books. They didn't want to read church books. They wanted something broader than that. And in 1981 or 82, they chose Sonia Johnson's From Housewife to Heretic. And they read that book. And I, along with going to that Sunday school class, also read all the books from the book club. And so at age 17, I read Sonia Johnson's book. And you know those moments that something in you shifts and you remember every detail about it? That's what happened when I was reading a section of Sonia Johnson's book. I was in the car with my mom. She was driving. The sun was high in the sky, so it must, or coming down in the sky, so it must have been late in the afternoon. I was wearing a white dress with little blue and pink flowers that I had made in MIA for an MIA project. And I read about Sonia Johnson, right around her excommunication, wanting to go up in fast and testimony meeting and say goodbye to her friends and family in the ward, and her bishop standing up and stopping her. And I was so shocked by that someone would do that. To me, it seemed like that's not what would have happened in the faith community I was functioning in. And it seemed so wrong, and maybe it was sort of that first light awareness of gender roles in Mormonism, because I was clearly living under something maybe a little different in my faith community. So the book club had the book review, and then the following Sunday, it was fast and testimony meeting. And that was the time that the deacons would walk up and down the aisles with the mic. And they were doing that, and the meeting started, and a man in the front, Richard, got the mic, stood up, and started to speak in support of Sonia Johnson, that she was doing the right thing. He was very concerned with the church's large involvement in opposing ERA. And on he went. And then pretty soon a man in the back got the other mic and stood up and started arguing with Richard. His name was Ted. And they started arguing in fast and testimony meeting about Sonia Johnson. And it wasn't just a minute or two. You know, they were having a debate right there. I happened to have a friend visiting that week, and when we got out of that meeting, he was just flush. Like, what was that? And I was surprised that he was surprised, because that's what I thought you did. I thought you debated issues like that and that it was okay. So that's thread number one. Thread number two. My dad read the San Francisco Chronicle. And he especially loved the weekend section because they reviewed films. And so he would get the film review section. They'd have a paragraph about the film and then a little like emoji of a man in a chair. And if the man was asleep in the chair, the movie was bad. If he was sitting up straight, the movie was okay. If he was clapping in the chair, the movie was good. And if he was jumping out of the chair clapping, it was great. And my dad would go through and only circle the man jumping out of the movies with the man jumping out of the chair. And then he would drive around the Bay Area and see only those films, and I went with him a lot. So we were seeing independent films. So we were seeing independent films, documentaries, foreign films. And so when I transferred to BYU in 1985 and read about a film festival starting in Park City called Sundance, it was just natural that I would go and go to that first year of Sundance. And I've been going to Sundance almost every year since. That first year, the years that my husband and I would trade off waking up at 4 in the morning to get tickets for that day, to now when we sleep in my brother's basement in Park City and see 3 or 4 movies a day. And what I see now as the value of that is that I've seen great films, but also the Q&A after. I, for the last 30 years at Sundance, have been watching people, filmmakers, talk about their craft and how they got started and how they got funding and why this subject and how they pursued it and, you know, all of that. And it's all come back to me now. So that's thread number two. Thread number three. As you might imagine, going from a ward like the Oakland First Ward to BYU and then to a suburban ward in Las Vegas was quite a traumatic shift. I started a book club in our Relief Society. We were kicked out. I tried for dialogue and discussion in Relief Society and Sunday school. I had a stake president tell me I'm doing everything to make sure there is no conversation in any Relief Society or Sunday school. I was raising daughters and a son and becoming more and more aware of the roles for women in Mormonism and feeling like they didn't fit what I wanted for me or my daughters. And then in 2008, when I learned of the church's involvement with Prop 8, I couldn't do it anymore. And I stopped participating in Mormonism. And I will not go into all the detail that a faith transition deserves, but I'll just summarize it by saying it was an incredibly traumatic personal odyssey, as some of you may know. Led to a year of intense marriage counseling. It pulled the rug out from under my family. It changed family relationships, community, all that happens when you do that. And when the dust finally settled on that, I felt very strongly that I wanted to tell the story of a woman transitioning in her Mormon faith. And that was when I wanted to bring film into that, and yet had no idea how to go about that. I had no training. I was teaching at a college in my area. And so I started looking into film school, and I started doing reading, and how would I tell the story through film without experience? And one night my husband came in and he said, I've got a YouTube video for you to watch. And the title of it was, How to Be a Filmmaker in 10 Seconds. I'm like, okay. And so he played it, and it's a film director saying, do you want to be a filmmaker? Here's how you become a filmmaker. Say you're a filmmaker, and then you are a filmmaker. And I was like, okay. Oh, brother. And so, but the next day, and I think almost every day since, my husband about once a day will turn to me and say, you're a filmmaker. And for a while, it seemed really silly. And then, I don't know, it seems like maybe I had just come from Sundance and watched like a 23-year-old guy talk about how he, you know, dropped out of school and decided to make this film. And I had that moment of, I am watching so many people do so much more with so much less. Why can't I do this? I'm going to do this. So I started doing the things that I was reading about. I started a production company. I got a fiscal sponsor. I started looking into film crews in the Las Vegas area. I started reaching out to women that would connect me with Mormon women going through faith transitions. They started contacting me. And eventually I got to the point where I was filming women, interviewing them about their faith transition. And it was incredibly gratifying. And then one woman's story particularly rang true for me, and I wanted to follow her. And so she agreed. We had it all set up. I had a film crew ready to go to her house. And then she called me and said, I'm sorry, I've had some really major personal circumstances change, and I can't have you filming me. And that was February of 2014. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to take a month. I'm going to just see what happens, pause. Maybe she'll contact me. Maybe I'll find another story. And one night I was on the internet, and I read about a woman and a group called Kate Kelly and Ordained Women, and they were advocating for Mormon women to get the priesthood. And I thought, that is no ordinary woman, and that is no ordinary group. So I thought, well, I'll see if I can contact Kate Kelly. Maybe no one's following her, but I thought, surely someone is. I called her. They might have been, but she said yes to me, too. And she actually, in that phone conversation, she said yes, and I said, you might want to think about it. And then I hung up the phone, and I was like, what are you doing? So I called her back and said, I'm going to take that yes, and started filming her. So we filmed her with her family. We filmed the April action. I wanted to get her in Virginia and her life there at the time. We went to film there. That was when she received word from her stake president about her first action. We drove her there and filmed it. And we did a little more filming, and then it reached the point where she learned of her church court and then planned the vigil. So we were set to come to the vigil and film there. And about a week before that, she mentioned that the Ordained Women Board was getting together the morning after. And I said, oh, I would really love to film your board. And she said, well, I'll ask them. She did. They said no. But she said, maybe if you write them a note or an email telling them why you want to be there, maybe they will. And so I did. And I wrote them and said, I know that, you know, a lot's been happening. You've been hounded by the press. It's been an incredibly intense time. But just know that my filming you won't come out the next day or the next week. That was 3 years ago. It will be in a year or two, and I'll only stay an hour. And they said yes. So we filmed the vigil, and Kate did not receive word from her church court that night. And the next day, we were filming the board, which was such an honor for me. They, you know, here's a group of women who are working on behalf of Mormon women without the oversight of any patriarchy. And just to, that footage is some of my favorite footage because it's them talking, concerned, interested, wanting to do all they can for Mormon women, and I love that footage. Anyway, so I got a little caught up. We were a little over an hour, and I'm thinking, we need to wrap this up. And my cameraman at the time, who is a 6'5 Senegalese man, raised Muslim, was checking his camera, told me later, he checked his camera, he had 3 to 4 minutes left, but a voice was telling him, don't turn off the camera. And so he had the camera on Kate, and we had a second camera, and right then Kate received the news from her bishop of her excommunication. It is a really surreal experience to film something that you are personally devastated by and thrilled to have captured it on film. That's what was happening for me and my completely non-Mormon crew. We were filming it, tears. But I was thinking, I've got something now. I have something to show, and I want to tell this story. We did not stay an hour. We stayed the entire day. And some of the board's here, and I apologize for that. But so we got that whole day, and so we've been following up with Kate since then, and it has evolved to this trailer. I guess without further ado, I'll show you the trailer, and then I'll take questions after that.
I've been thinking about my baptism. I was imagining a white dress and the whole experience. I show up, and there's this huge jumpsuit for a man. I threw a tantrum, and I said, I'm not going to get baptized, and I was very, very upset. Eventually, they got me into the jumpsuit. That experience encapsulates so much for me. Mormon men are the mold, and everyone else is another.
God has directed that only men will be ordained to offices in the priesthood.
The women of the church are not complaining about it.
You know why they can't be priests?
Well, only that the Lord has not designated that they will be.
He did not create men and women exactly the same. Gender is an essential characteristic of mortal and eternal identity and purpose.
In the making, as roughly 200 women lined up at Temple Square. Their main goal here is to one day be ordained into the priesthood.
My name is Kate. I'm a wife. I'm a sister. I'm a human rights law attorney. And I believe that women should be ordained.
Many thousands of women all over the world belong to the Relief Society, organized by Revelation in 1839.
In the Relief Society, we learn how to become better wives and mothers and receive religious instruction in this worldwide organization. I feel that Mormon women have always been liberated.
There's two reasons we want the priesthood. One, because we believe in the priesthood and it is a power of God. But also because the entire leadership structure of the church is based on priesthood. We're excluded from authority. I'm active, and I'm faithful, and I'm Mormon. A year ago, I thought 10 people would join Ordained Women, and now we have thousands of people involved.
If you have a profile on Ordained Women, can you raise your hand?
We decided decided to make a website so that we could tell our own story and we could say, this is who we are, so we could take control of the narrative. We're Mormon women. We come from all over the world. The conversation didn't exist before ordained women, not publicly, not openly. It was like the forbidden fruit of Mormon feminism to say that women should be ordained.
Despite warnings in recent weeks from her church leaders in Virginia, Kelly has not backed away from her organization, Ordained Women.
Any relationship that you care about, you have difficult conversations. And that's happening right now with the church. They are the person in the relationship trying to, like, pretend they're busy. They're very reluctant to engage in this conversation with us.
In the church, we want all to feel welcome, and there is room for questions, but how we ask is just as important as what we ask.
I might have been more of a doubter last year, but now the sky's the limit. I don't know. It could be next year. It could be any time. That's the beauty of Mormonism.
Church officials have stated it becomes a concern when individuals recruit others to push for changes in church doctrine.
I don't fit under the definition of apostasy. I'm a faithful, active Mormon woman. I went to church this morning.
Kelly says more than 1,000 people submitted letters of support to the bishopric holding the disciplinary council.
So, didn't go well. They put me on informal discipline.
Until I take down Ordained Women, remove my profile from the site. I can go to church, but I basically can't participate.
It's David and Goliath situation where the David is not going to win. It's just a very surreal experience when a life event happens and I have to alert the New York Times and ABC World News.
I'm the only one probably still thinks I'm not going to get excommunicated. Sister Kelly, as you know, disciplinary council was held on your behalf June 22nd, 2014. Having done so, our determination is that you be excommunicated. You may not wake up. I realized I had no right to remain silent because I have nieces and loved ones who are going to grow up in the shadow of men in this church. One day they're going to look up on the stand and they're going to realize that men are authorities and women are only auxiliary to them. Young Mormon girls are prepared for motherhood alone. And young Mormon boys are prepared for careers and for leadership. As we walk to the tabernacle today, we will be reverent, we will be respectful, but we will not be silenced.
First of all, I just want to recognize that the Kelly family is here, and I'm grateful that they're here. And there are also some of the original Ordained Women board that I got to know that are here, and I'm glad that they're here. So, a few things before we start with questions. First of all, after my faith transition, one of the things that my family had to navigate, one of the many things that my family had to navigate, was how would we honor breaking bread, or praying at mealtime, because we had reached a point where we have my husband, who's devout. I'm not practicing. We have non-believing, various forms and a lot of different perspective on prayer. And so what we came up with, or what we do now, is a variety. We have a traditional Mormon prayer, a moment of silence, a one-word affirmation, a smelling of the food. For a while, when my son was a teenager, we had him mumbling something, we have no idea what. And I kind of see, I see that same navigation having to happen with this film. There are a lot of perspectives. There's my own that I've shared a little bit with you that I'm bringing into this. There's, I think, a lot about Kate and her incredible parents. There's... there's the Ordained Women Board that I got to know that I have such deep respect for. There is a non-Mormon audience that knows nothing about Mormonism that I'm fundraising with. This, in, to me, seems kind of an introduction of the subject, because I'm trying to let them know, who the players were, what the issue is, and, what it looks like. I have a woman that's on my team now who's not Mormon, has no connection with Mormonism other than she just moved to Utah, who's always asking me, tell me why I need to care about these women in this story. We need to be telling that. So all that's coming into this film, and I just want you to know that I'm carrying all that as I'm trying to tell, I think one of the very first feature-length films about progressive Mormon women. So I feel this huge responsibility, and I just want to make that clear. The second thing is, making a film is super expensive. The next step for this film, I am all ready to do the feature-length edit. That is incredibly expensive. The estimates that have been given to me and what we're projecting on my budget is $100,000 to $200,000. So you saw some envelopes going around. That's my website. You click a button and you can donate. If you can help, I would appreciate it. If you know someone else that can, please let them know. If whatever you can do, spread the word, tell somebody. I would love to tell this story of female equity in Mormonism. Did I get everything? I think that's it. Yeah, so I'll stop talking, and if you have questions, I'd love to take them. Yeah.
What is your favorite
movie? Some wonderful person that came yesterday on the, not that you have to do this, but on the survey put that. That was his favorite. I was so touched by that. I have a lot. One that always stands out to me is The Widow of Sam Pierre. It's about a very strong French woman and her very understanding husband. So, other questions? Yeah.
Yeah, is there a way we can share this video and spread it around?
Okay. There's a bit of this that I wanted to put in for fundraising purpose that's not licensed. So I can't publish it, but I can fundraise with it. So I can privately share it. I just can't publish it on a website. So if you get my email and want to send it to someone, I can do that. Other questions? Yeah,
Don. When do you anticipate being done with the whole movie?
If fundraising goes as planned, as hoped, next fall we will start submitting to film festivals.
Sundance, maybe?
That is the dream. That is the dream, and in my view, a perfect venue for this, in this area, and they are so good with controversial Mormon films. Fingers crossed. I just was fundraising with someone that knows someone that's like, you know, someone at Sundance. I'm working every angle I can. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, Renee.
Could Kate share with us what it was that started her on this journey?
Yeah. Do you want to do that?
Renee, who worked on the original ERA fight and many other things and is a pioneer in many ways and lives in Nevada, asked, could I share why I originally decided to start Ordained Women? And I just want to say Cindy has done a wonderful job following us. And okay, now this is turning into testimony meeting, but I feel really great about the film, and a friend of ours worked on the trailer. His name is Torben Bernard, and he made other things like Trans Mormon. He made that film. And he said, you know what? I told Cindy, I'm just going to make the film that the footage reveals. You know, I'm gonna be true to the footage. So if Kate looks like a monster, she's going to look like a monster in the trailer, even though I know her. So I was like, yay, I'm not a monster. And so I feel like it's very true to the experience. And so I really appreciated that. The reason I started Ordained Women, I was to dinner with Renee the other night. I'm a human rights attorney, and I don't know if that'll come out in the film. It's funny because I'm like, this is only like a tiny fraction of my life. I have all this other stuff that I do. But they did film me one day up in D.C., up on the hill. It's not good footage. I wasn't crying in it. But the reason I worked all over the world, you know, in Western Sahara and Dominican Republic and Mexico and Zimbabwe and with all these different women who were really taking these very drastic risks to stand up for themselves in their communities. Like, by drastic, I mean they were getting routinely beaten, jailed, tortured. I worked with Aminatou Haidar, she's the Gandhi of Western Sahara, and she was imprisoned for 13 years by the Moroccan government and blindfolded that entire time and tortured routinely throughout that whole time, but still got out of prison and then still continued to do hunger strikes, still continued to do all these things. And the people who are in her community are doing this to her, like, live down the street. You know, this is her immediate community where she's being so brave. And I thought, I'm doing all this work in all these different places to help women feel empowered. What is it I'm doing in my most immediate community to change things for myself and for women like me and for the people that I love? And I felt a tinge of inauthenticity, that I was doing all these things elsewhere, but not in my most immediate community, which was very brutally misogynistic. And so that's when I decided, okay, well, I'm going to start standing up for myself because I'm so inspired by these other women. And that was in January of 2013. And I called my best friend, who was my roommate at BYU, and I said, okay, what are we going to do? I just want full equality. And she's like, okay. And she and I had both done activism in other areas. You know, I'd worn an orange jumpsuit protesting Guantanamo outside of the White House. I'd been to immigration rallies. I'd done tons. She's an environmental activist. And she said, okay, well, what's the number one rule of activism? And it's, you have to have an ask. You have to be able to know when you've accomplished the thing you're asking for. So she's like, so what would the ask be? And I'm like, well, I guess that's priesthood. And she's like, yep, you'll know if they gave you the priesthood or not. You'll know if women are ordained. You'll know when you got it. And So that was that. And then started calling a lot of other people, including Lori, Winter Stromberg, who's here, and other folks who were like, all right, let's do this. And that's how it all began.
Sure. First, Cindy, thank you for your time and effort on this project. Two questions. First, have you thought about distribution, whether you're going to go through for-profit theaters or public television? I mean, what's your distribution arm? Have you thought
film to festivals is first, and depending on how it does there, will determine what's next. You know, you can go to a film festival and you can get a what's it called? A drawing.
Like Sundance, for example?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So I think because I love Sundance, I just love the idea of going to a film festival. And I really like that they're kind of grassroots too. Anyway, that's how I would want to start, is with a film festival. But that can also, you know, you can do really well at a film festival and have nothing happen, and then you can move it on to other areas, or you can get a distributor at a film festival, someone who likes it and buys it, and then you're set that way too. So, it, you know, starting with film festivals, that's where I want to begin.
Have you thought about the message that you'll probably present in the final minutes of the film? Is it a statement as a cautionary tale to other religions, don't take this path, or do, or here's what one movement is? What's your final message?
Thanks.
I want to tell the story of female inequality in Mormonism, and the vehicle that I have to do that is Kate Kelly. I don't like hit pieces in films. I don't think they make good films at all. I have no intention of doing that with the Mormon Church. I have no feeling to do that to the Mormon Church. And I also think that films are really interesting when you show, when they're character driven like this one, and you show, you know, all the complexity of a person. And Kate is so much that. And especially because of this dramatic change in her life. You know, there's so much before. And yesterday when we filmed, she was saying that it was so strange to see herself as she was pre-excommunication. But that was a lot of what I saw, was that Kate, you know. And so there's a lot of complexity to Kate, and I think that's what makes an interesting film. So, you know, the subject is female inequality. The vehicle is Kate Kelly. That's what I'm trying to tell. Yeah.
So you mentioned kind of leading up to when you chose Kate as maybe the primary subject.
Right.
They're recording.
Oh, okay.
They want it on.
Okay. So you mentioned that leading up to the choosing Kate, that you had interviewed a lot of other women. Is that going to be part of the film?
No, it's not. What I was doing with them was interviewing them about their faith transition. And so that does not fit into this. I have that footage. I'm holding on to it. I don't know what will happen with that footage. I've even seen a few topics here that are women talking about faith transition and something, and I plan to do something with it, but no, it won't be part of this. I, you know, one thing I want to add to that, making this film about Kate Kelly, and getting to know progressive Mormon women outside of the little community I was raised in, getting to know the board, and getting to know, you know, Lisa Butterworth that does FMA, you know, all of that. There are so many rich stories of Mormon women that need to be told. I feel like I could make 10 different films from the footage that I have. There's just a lot there. So anyway, but this will be the first one. Mark.
Will the footage be preserved somehow for historical purposes?
You're close too.
That's a great idea. I hadn't thought of that. The one thing that I promised the Ordained Women Board is that I have you know, that day with them. So, and a lot of what I have is before Kate got her notice, and like I said, it's just this wonderful footage of these women talking, and so that I promised them that when the film's done, I plan to put that on DVD and send that to each of them, so they have a record of that. But yeah, if you know who would want my footage and what to do with it, that would be great.
Maybe the university.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no reason to just have footage gather dust somewhere after the film's done. Yeah. Yeah.
As a non-Mormon, when I see the footage that's on the screen now, what were they asking or what were they talking about?
Oh. That's good to know. They are asking to enter the meeting that's only for men. So men's meeting, no women can enter. Women's meeting, men can enter. So it was just an action to demonstrate that. But
because their expressions were pretty, it's okay.
Oh, no. There, a lot of tears. Okay.
This is a normal thing I'm doing. It's an everyday thing. That's how it comes across.
Well,
as a non-Mormon.
Okay, that's good to know. You know what? Why don't I just stand or? Yeah. Okay.
Has the non-Mormon husband of the woman that asked this question? it appears that it's just an everyday conversation. You're asking a polite question, and somebody's giving you an answer, and you're just turning away. We don't know that there's stress and strain, and because the ladies are just so calm. And we understand that that's part of what you're understanding, that that's part of what you're trying to, part of the method that you're using to make your point, but it doesn't come across, unless you're from Salt Lake and you know some of the background because of the papers, this could come across as just, okay, you know, no big deal. You know, I don't have any ice cream for you today. Come back tomorrow.
Well, the women that are in that will be thrilled to know that because, you know, my sense from the women I talked to is that there was a lot going on underneath that calm veneer. And, you know, just to explain why you don't know more about that, this is actually a little bit long for a sizzle reel. So introducing this topic is tough to get all that in. And a film, you know, obviously will be much easier to do that. So if that happens in the full length, let me know. Donna.
I just want to put in a plug for you, including one little episode. One of my favorite moments that you came and filmed was the marriage of my son, Jake, and his husband. And Kate performed that ceremony and married them. And one of the favorite lines that I heard that day was when she said, sorry, when she said, "And by the authority that I claim for myself, I perform this marriage." And I loved that moment, and I just didn't know if you were planning to include it in your film.
I love that moment, too. The answer is yes, I want to. I have about 250 of those moments.
all of us out.
Oh, no. one of the things that I really actually regret that I couldn't put in the sizzle reel is you and Jim. That is such beautiful and important footage, watching you as parents and how you handled all of this. And the story through your eyes is, you know, really powerful. who you are as parents is the ideal of what I think we hold up in Mormonism, of just these incredible parents who are so supportive. And anyway, I could go on and on about the Kellys. I just think they're great.
I love that moment, if you can include
it. I'm not Mormon, but I am a woman, and I found this to be exceedingly powerful. Because I've run into, I can't tell you how many churches where I've hit that same wall, not in this, at the same, to the same degree, but it's just there. Not to mention the rest of society.
Yeah, I hope that, you know, unfortunately, female inequality is everywhere. You know, I'm reading about it right now in the tech world and what women are trying to do there, and it's in government and business and science, and you know, and so that is one of the appeals I think of this. Yeah, and yes, and so this microcosm of what's happening here with this group in Mormonism, you know, is telling of what's happening everywhere, unfortunately. Yeah, Taylor. Yeah.
I was just going to say, as a like former Mormon woman, to the non-Mormons, we're taught as young girls, and we recite this every week, to be obedient. And we're also taught to be really polite and kind and cheerful. So that's why when women are being turned away, they look like, oh, no big deal. They're not taught to be free-thinking or to speak out for themselves or to speak up for themselves. So that would be for the non-Mormon folks in the room. And then to Cindy, do you think your film will show that?
That's a really good point. I'll keep that in mind for sure, because you're right, culturally, putting Kate and ordained women in context culturally is really important to me, because it is incredibly unusual. Incredibly unusual. You know, not right here at Sunstone, but, you know, how many do they claim now? 15 million Mormons? It's doesn't happen often. So, yeah, it's definitely on my mind to portray that. Kate.
I was going to say an anecdote from that is at the first action, there were millions of reporters, and there was a reporter from Al Jazeera, and after the whole thing was over, the reporter from Al Jazeera was like, wait, that was it? Like, that was it? Everyone just like politely asked to get in and then left when they were asked to very politely? Like, how did the internet break down over this? Like, how is this a controversy? Like, he really didn't understand. He was like, I thought that was the beginning, and I thought there would be something. I couldn't understand that was the action because the women were so polite.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, because one way we're trying to deal with that in the film, and now this is tricky, but is to find a woman who does not support this in any way and get that perspective, because that's one way we're trying to show that we have a little bit of that footage of some women talking about it. And, you know, for many devout Mormon women, this is outrageous, just very outrageous. So I think there are two here and then there.
So right as this was going on, I was leaving the church, and I was wondering from Kate, I understand part of the reason why you were so polite and just left, but I wondered, I was kind of thinking maybe you did that because of the whole, if you, what's the word that they use when they say we're kind of, what's that?
Tone?
Yeah, tone, but like, you know how if you say something in a tone that's argumentative, but that's not the word I'm thinking of. Contentious, that you wouldn't be taken seriously at all, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, Satan has done this to you. And so I kind of, like, when I'm watching this, so I'm friends with Marita, and I, you know, totally am Mormon until I was 34, and I was thinking, had they done it any other way, it would have been like, see, Satan has them, right? I mean, isn't that kind of why you couldn't do anything other than be polite, even if inside you wanted to be like much more. I mean, right?
I want people to ask Cindy about her film because you can ask me about anything. But it was target audience. So the target audience is not non-Mormons. The target audience isn't some Al Jazeera reporter. It's not important. It wasn't important that they understood. What was important is that Orthodox believing active Mormons took us seriously. And in order to do that, we had to speak their language. And their language is not contentious, is polite, is reverent, is treating the church clothes, treating the space that we were in as a sacred space. So if it's a sacred space for you and you want to go into the sacred space, you're not going to do something rowdy because you're demonstrating that you consider it to be a sacred space. So I was like, well, no one else is going to understand this, but that's not the target audience, you know.
Yeah, and I guess I just wanted to respond about the same passage in the film. To me, I understand the comment about young women being raised to be obedient and being raised Mormon. I really didn't feel that I would ever be treated as an equal, and that's part of why I personally decided I needed to leave the church. But for me, I don't feel like this passage is one showing women just leaving passively with a sense of failure. To me, it feels very strongly, and it comes very strongly across to me, that they are maintaining their integrity and walking away with strength and a sense of, like, despite being turned away and leaving with integrity and not... I guess breaking down by being contentious, and that to me is just such a point of strength, and I love that footage for that. So,
yeah, that's a really good point. Mark, did you have a question?
I wonder, when you get to the full length, will you be telling, like, sort of more in more detail some of the, like, around the second action? There was a lot of gamesmanship going back and forth between us and between the church. When she goes through the side gate, I mean, that was not the plan, but that was like a gift from heaven, because the church had stuff set up at the south gate for us to try and stop it and everything. I wonder, will you be able to get into some of that detail, or?
Yeah, showing how risky it actually was and how lucky they were to get it. Yes, we will. And there's, that gives me an opportunity too to, you know, talk about some other favorite footage that's not even in here. So the Ordained Women Board, as I mentioned, Donna and Jim, there's a lot with them that's really important to me. There's an incredible interview that I did with Joanna Brooks, which actually is where the title comes from. I asked her something like, what's your vision for Mormonism? And just gave one of the most beautiful passages. I call it her I Want a Faith passage. You know, she started with, I want a faith where women can speak their minds without being disciplined. I want a faith where civil equality is respected. I want a faith where... and then the end is something like, I want a global, progressive, humanitarian, unruly faith. So when I've shown this to a couple of devout family and friends, and when I tell them the title, that's very off-putting to them, because they think I'm talking negatively about Mormonism, and I'm actually pulling that from a progressive Mormon woman's vision of Mormonism. And I like the play on it too, because is it referring to Mormonism? Is it referring to progressive Mormon women's vision? Is it referring to Kate's faith about female ordination. It, you know, I feel like it could kind of apply to all of that. So I got way off your question, but anyway.
There's so many parts to this. It's amazing. And it's truly, truly wonderful that it's taking place in Salt Lake. Because Salt Lake, for me, from the East Coast and coming here with a lot of passion for a lot of issues, myself and the lovely lady in the back have also been asked to leave a church or encouraged to leave a church because of our views and our passions and what we thought was important. So we've experienced the same thing. In a different context, but it's the same thing. It's no different. It's people that think differently, questioning the status quo, and asking the people that are in charge of this, maintaining the status quo, to think about things in a different way. And that doesn't happen easily, and we're still working at it. And my wife is still over there, still crying, because she was in tears and walked out, and I was managed to handle it just like the young ladies did. I sat there quietly for an hour and politely answered their questions and tuned into, you know, and it was pretty, I thought it was the way the ladies was really powerful. But Salt Lake and the culture is ultimately conservative, and when you try and bring about change in the middle of a conservative structure, the structure doesn't want to change. It is what it is. And when you ask it to change, you create what you're doing. And so what I'm suggesting is that conflict that arises is needed, because that leads to dialogue and discussion if both parties will discuss it. And if you can figure out a way to make that happen, you'll accomplish something really wonderful. But I am back here saying never going to happen, because it is what it is.
Actually, in Mormonism, it has happened. There are a lot of people here that can correct me if I'm wrong, but one primary example is blacks in the priesthood. So that blacks in the Mormon priesthood, so they weren't allowed into the priesthood until 1978, but there was so much pressure being put on and law being done before that. And am I getting this right, Lori, whoever knows, that there was doctrinal reasons for them not to have the priesthood, and there is no doctrinal reason for women not having the priesthood. Am I right?
No.
Okay. Someone.
There's disagreement.
The denial of blacks in the priesthood was not doctrinal. It was a policy decision that didn't even require a revelation, but got one anyway. David O. McKay determined during his administration he wanted to change that policy, and ended up ultimately deciding there was no doctrinal prohibition. It was a policy, but he chose not, it, that the time, he didn't feel the timing was right, and Spencer Kimball did.
But CES always thought that it was a policy despite what President McKay thought. There was no doctrine. The church education system.
There is an interpretation of various scriptures that people have concluded is doctrinal, but it is not doctrinal.
Brigham Young, May 5th, 1852, in his speech to the territorial legislature, made it absolutely clear about doctrinal.
Yeah. In his mind, it was doctrinal, but that's his interpretation. That has now been, read the policy statement.
This... okay. Okay, see, someone needs to make a film about that. Let me just bring it back to the film. I hope that came through in the trailer that you know, we have three different church leaders talking about, as far as female ordination, there is no doctrine. Dallin Oaks saying that part where he says only men will have the priesthood, I think that happened like 20 minutes after those women walked and asked to be admitted. So his saying that was a response to them. He was not, you know, establishing a policy or doctrine or anything. How are we on time?
About 10 minutes.
Okay. Renee.
It's over. Oh. I thought it was 12:30.
It's done.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah, minus 2 minutes.
Please fill out the survey. Please donate if you can. Please tell your rich friends to donate if they can. Thank you very much.